Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Dom Harvey podcast, brought to you by Radix and Generate. Coming up, New Zealand pole vault legend, Liv McTaggart.
I remember coming back to the athlete village and walking back in, and someone there was like, oh man, I'm so sorry, like fourth, that's the worst place you could get. And I was like, ah, like it hurts, trust me, this really hurts. It's easy to get caught in, like, poor me, or catastrophize a lot of situations, whereas now it's finding out what it is that I can take from it and actually enjoying that and knowing that the whole worth isn't connected to performances. It's about who you are as a person, how you bounce back from different situations.
McTaggart is 24 years old and is one of the greatest pole vaulters New Zealand has ever produced. Her highest jump so far is 4 metres 71 centimetres. For comparison, the height of a double-decker bus is 4 metres 40 centimetres. At 18, she fulfilled her childhood dream of going to the Commonwealth Games and finished in the top 10. Then at her second Commonwealth Games, she finished fourth. Fourth! Fourth! This year, she is hoping to raise the bar, excuse the pun, and go to the Olympics in Paris. If, like me, you know nothing about pole vaulting, you're in for an education as we break down one of the most technical, complex, and fascinating sports around. But this is so much more than a sports chat. Liv and I discuss so much really cool stuff that I know we can all get some value from. Building confidence through hard work. Her three P's, passion, persistence, and pride. Body image, and so much more. Liv McTaggart's pre-pole vault mantra is calm and dangerous, and those two words definitely describe Liv. Can't wait to share this one with you guys. Just before we get into it, thanks to the legends who have made this conversation possible, Radix and Generate. If I could ask one massive favour from you guys, it would be that you consider supporting these brands. Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of chart-topping long-term performance. If you want to make sure you're making the most of your KiwiSaver, talk to an advisor now. Head to generatekiwisaver.co.nz/get advice. According to a recent study from Massey University, you'll need around $600,000 saved up for an awesome retirement lifestyle. The best time to start planning this was yesterday. The second best time is right now. Get in touch. generatekiwisaver.co.nz/get advice. Also, massive thanks to Radix. Radix nutritional products are plain and simply world class. I start every day with a protein shake made with Radix powder. Sometimes I throw in a banana, maybe some oats and yogurt, and I'm ready to seize the day. This has been my routine for over 2 years now, and I absolutely swear by it. If you want to look and feel good every damn day, try Radix. Check them out, radixnutrition.co.nz. Radix is spelled R-A-D-I-X. radixnutrition.co.nz. All right, let's go. Liv McTaggart on the Dom Harvey podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. Happy to be here.
It is great to have you here. Liv McTaggart, one of New Zealand's top female pole vaulters, which is a sport that I'm just so intrigued by. By the way, you jumped 4 metres 71.
Yes.
That is your PB.
That's a personal best, about equivalent to 2 double-decker buses, I think, if you put that into perspective.
It's a crazy height. And there's I've watched so much video of you in the lead up to this podcast, and there's so much going on with pole vaulting and what you do. I'm guessing you've done it so many times it's like a muscle memory thing. Like, you know exactly what to do and you don't even have to think about it. But could you talk us through a jump from like start to finish?
Jump start to finish. It's one of the most technical sports. So I think, to break it down in layman's terms, you start off with the run. So the run is very rhythmical. So you choose a certain step or run up. Most females will be on 16 step. I'm on 18, so one of the further ones away. So you have a run and you figure out your rhythm for that, and you have the pole completely upright. And then you go into the plant phase. So just before you go into the box, you plant your pole, hit a really nice takeoff. To get a good jump, it all comes from the takeoff. Get a good stretch on it, go upside down, go into what we call the invert. So you get a really nice swing into the invert, and then push off the top. And that's the best feeling when you're going over the top, which is just that pop from the energy. When you get a really good vault, it just feels effortless. And going over that bar is probably one of the best feelings that you could get. So.
Yeah, because watching videos of you doing it, you know immediately if you've cleared it or not. And you're like sometimes applauding yourself on the way down to the mat.
Yes, yeah, I think that's something that I do. I like to...
Is that your signature move?
I don't even know that I'm doing it until I look back on videos, but as I come down on the mat, it's just that immediate elation knowing that you've cleared one of those heights, no matter if it's the first opening height or one of the last ones. It's such a good feeling, so I think whichever celebration comes, you try not to think about it, to be honest.
Yeah, so what are you thinking? Because it looks like you're psyching yourself up or giving yourself a little pep talk before you start the run up. Then what are you thinking about? Or are you not thinking about anything? You're just completely in the moment.
I think you're very much in the moment. Yeah. You have about 5 seconds to complete this whole jump. At the start, I like to take a few breaths beforehand, just to know I'm in a good sort of calm space to actually think slightly about what I'm doing. And from there, it's about two different cues where I'm just trying to figure out what in the jump do I need to be working on. You can't really be thinking about more than one or two things at once. So you go through those cues and then hopefully execute it at the end of the jump. But it's almost like tunnel vision. A lot of the time I get off the mats and I don't really remember the whole jump. Mm. But when it all comes together, there's so much video analysis we do for it as well. So I think that muscle memory takes over time. And then whatever you need to focus on in the time is when it all comes together.
Yeah. Do you have like a mantra or anything that you say to yourself before you start? Or any key words or key phrases or anything?
Oh, there is one which is calm and dangerous.
I like it.
Yeah, it's quite a good one. I've had for a few years. Someone told me about it. I think that calm is just staying really composed, and then that dangerous is bringing out that determination, and something that is really sort of deep inside me, that determination, that grit, something that I carry through, and I guess my persona as a vaulter as well. So calm and dangerous, and normally just the two things I need to be working on. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll tell you what, we'll go back to the early years. We'll wind it back. We'll go back to the early years, and then we'll get back to the pole vaulting stuff later, because there's a lot to get into. So you're born in Queensland. You're an Australian.
I am. I am an Australian. I'm half-half, yep.
When did you move to NZ?
So I was 5 years old.
Right. How come?
My dad got a job offer, so it was either Sydney, Auckland, or Gold Coast. And he didn't necessarily want to bring us up on the Gold Coast. And my mum was actually born in Auckland. So sort of just decided to move to Auckland. And probably one of the best decisions we could have had. I mean, I am a Kiwi, don't worry.
Yeah, there's not even a hint of an Australian accent.
Not even a hint. Sometimes I get told there's a tiny bit. But I mean, 5 years old. It's well and truly
gone. How old
are
you now?
Almost 24, 23.
Yeah, 23, 24. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so you're born in Australia. When did you start gymnastics? Did you start gymnastics when you were in Australia?
Oh, ever since I can remember, about 4 years old. Yeah, 4 years old as a little jelly bean gymnast.
Four is tiny.
It's tiny, yeah. I remember doing little rope climbs as a four-year-old, just climbing up them, being this little excitable kid. Probably got some sort of something in me that I just need to keep moving. And then moved to New Zealand and started gymnastics, I guess, competitively, sort of onwards from there. But yeah, I had Russian coaches growing up, so it's a pretty full-on environment from the age of like years old.
Did you want to do gymnastics, or was it like a pushy mom thing? Or
oh no, definitely not. I wanted to. I think there was just so much energy in me, it had to be put into some sort of outlet. And my mum found gymnastics, and me and my brother started around the same time. We had a little entry criteria to try get into gymnastics, and I think it was pull-ups and something on the rope, and we absolutely smashed it. So got into the little kiddies program and went from there. But yeah, it was an intense period of time, so to say.
Yeah, because you were I think I read somewhere you were training like 20 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
At what age?
I think we started 20 plus hours at 9 or 10 years old. So it was...
That's unbelievable.
It's so weird to think that back then I was almost doing more hours in gymnastics than I am now, because that's just wild to me, but it's a sport where you have such a short sort of career that you need to get all of it in at a young age. I'm still not sure if I agree on that amount of training at a young age, but
it's a lot. Like,
it is.
But you must have been, your parents must have been on board, but I'm sure that they were only on board if you were on board. Like, they must have seen you were loving it, I guess.
Oh yeah, they saw I absolutely loved it. I was never pushed into anything. I think a lot of my self-belief and sort of passion for my sport comes from my parents, in terms of they didn't push me into it. They just said, do whatever it is that you want to do. We'll support you through it. And so for me, it was choosing gymnastics, to the point where even in my later years of gymnastics, my mum didn't actually want me to keep going because she saw how intense it was. So that back injury maybe was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, so that's what ended your gymnastics run. You had a back thing. So what sort of gymnastics were you doing?
I was doing artistic gymnastics. Right. So the vault, bar, beam, floor, flipping, running at stationary objects like I'm doing now.
Yeah, I would have thought you'd need like an upper body strength for that stuff, which you wouldn't necessarily have as a kid.
Yeah, I think I developed it pretty quick, doing 20 hours a week in the gym.
That'll do it.
Doing about 3 rope climbs, chin-ups for days, a lot of ab work. I was about 19 years old and I was just this shredded, jacked little kid.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, like, I really was.
Like a kid with abs.
I had like an 8-pack at probably 10 years old.
Oh my God, that is terrifying.
Just the amount of training that we're doing. It was a lot, but I absolutely loved it. Mm. It was my outlet, yeah.
And what was the story with the back injury? Was there like a specific incident or was it just wear and tear?
A lot sort of went into it. We ended up getting some scans actually for a hip injury at the time. And once we got the scans back, they said we might as well do a full scan sort of on your back and see what's going on there, because a lot of gymnasts get stress fractures. Mm. And when that came back, they said that my L5 was connected to my sacrum from birth, which actually happens to apparently 20% of women, but they don't do that amount of sport to actually realize it or see it in a scan. So we saw that, and the scan came back with 3 different stress fractures in my back. So 2 on either side, and then 1 where that sort of sacralization actually broken off. So yeah, my back was pretty ruined. I tried to keep going. I just didn't want to stop gymnastics. It had become my full identity. I couldn't imagine life without it, even at that young age. I was 14. But I went to the doctor and they said that I'll never be able to do gymnastics ever again, which at that time I was like, I literally don't know what else I can be doing.
That must have been devastating.
Yeah, it was devastating. So I had to quit gymnastics, unfortunately, was ripped away from the sport. I think it would have had to have taken something like that to actually get me away from it. So it did. Had a couple months off and decided what next, like what is it that I want to be doing.
What was that period? Yeah, can you remember like hearing the news?
Oh yeah, I remember it very, very vividly. I think I didn't know how bad this injury would be. We went through all the scans and doctor's appointments and everything, and it got to a point where if I was standing up for too long or sitting down for too long, my back would get quite sore. So we knew there was something going on there. It was not until I actually got into the doctor's office and he said that I would never do it again, and I really struggled. I definitely remember being in denial for a while there. I was like, oh, maybe I can just do the bars, or that won't be as much stress on my back, or maybe I'll just do beam,
sort of compromise.
Yeah, compromise, like I have to stay in the sport. But it just wasn't going to work. So that period of time, ever since I can remember, I've wanted to be an Olympian. I've wanted to be a professional athlete. So I took a little bit of time off to try to figure out what it is that I wanted to do, and then got into pole vaulting. But yeah, I definitely remember those 2-3 months was quite difficult.
Yeah, were you depressed?
I don't know if I'd go as far as to say depressed, but very much lost.
What's a lot of free time that you suddenly got in your schedule? Eh?
It was, definitely.
a lot of downtime, yeah.
Yeah, everything was just attached to this identity of Livy the gymnast. Like, that's just who I was. And so losing that, I had to find who I was outside of that in such a tricky age, like that 14, 15-year-old sort of period in time was, something that I just sort of had to deal with. But my brother had actually quit gymnastics a few years before me. He chose to quit and he went into weightlifting. So I sort of followed a little bit.
Yeah, by the way, we'll get into that later as well because, insanely talented family.
Yes.
He's an Olympian and a completely different sport as well, which is so bizarre.
Yeah, exactly. It's been amazing having him there for throughout all of this. So I think seeing him go into another sport and then me seeing that it could be possible to go into some other sport. Mm. I was told I could not do javelin and I could not do fast bowling with my back. And other than that, I saw that as full free reign. I knew I wanted to still go upside down and do something else. But yeah, I think that period of being lost and my mum just trying to help me through that, saying maybe we do this or maybe we try another sport. I was just like, I don't know who I am without this. Like, I don't know how to get through it. Ended up going to the Youth Olympics to watch my brother in weightlifting. And through there, I was able to actually see a little bit of pole vaulting and some other athletics events. And I was like, right, let's get back on track. Let's see what it is that I can be doing. I just had this full tunnel vision even after that.
Yeah, what was it in you that saw pole vaulting and thought, oh, I could do that? I can honestly say, out of all the pole vaulting I've ever watched, I know that I couldn't do it. Yeah. Was it just youthful brashness or confidence? Or
I think there's a little bit of confidence in there. Little brewing 14-year-old confident kid who, to be fair, a lot of the gymnastic skills that I was doing were a lot scarier than pole vaulting to a certain extent. So I knew I wanted to be going upside down. I knew I wanted to be doing something that would give me that same thrill. I'm such an adrenaline junkie that I knew I wanted to find something similar. Jeremy, my coach at the time, he actually came into our school and did an exhibition on pole vaulting. And then my ex-gymnastics teammate, Imogen, had started before me. And so many things just led me into pole vaulting.
So Imogen, who you're talking about. So there's the three top female pole vaulters in New Zealand are yourself, Imogen, and Eliza. So she got you into it.
We grew up doing gymnastics together for about 10 years. So I was in her group towards the end. And then she had started about 6 months before that. And I kind of saw her doing that and saw like a few other people joining pole vaulting and thought I would may as well give it a go. It seemed like a sport that was very similar to gymnastics. Already had all of the foundations from gymnastics. It sets you up for so many different sports. And so it was a easy-ish transition.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Yeah. So how do you start? What's that very first jump like?
Oh, the very first jump, it's very slow. You don't just get into it straight away and bend the pole. You do a lot of what we call straight pole drills. And to me, it was so boring for like a little bit of time coming from gymnastics into learning something completely new and just doing tiny little drills. I've never been a fan of them, but it's actually understanding what it takes to be a pole vaulter. You sort of run with the pole on the ground rather than up in the air, and then you kind of go off onto your butt, and then you go onto your back, and then you eventually start going upside down and over the poles, over the bars. But it's a pretty slow process, so it was difficult for a while there, and my back still wasn't great. So I remember my first few competitions, I actually had to wear a full back brace that went around my whole stomach to protect my back for the first few comps, which was some teething pains to start with.
Is the back all right now?
The back's good now. Yeah, we're managing it. It's not the same issues. It's actually fused back together where that sacralization was, so a little bit of joint sort of discomfort there every now and then, but I've got really good team around me, so we stay on top of it.
Yeah, and you, so your childhood goal of going to the Commonwealth Games. You did that. You went to the Games in 2018. Did you go to the last one?
I did, yes.
Oh, so you've been to two Commonwealth Games now?
Two Commonwealth Games, yeah.
So you finished ninth in 2018.
Yes.
Where'd you finish last time?
Oh, I finished fourth on count back. So I got the same height as second and third, but they got it on their first and second attempts, whereas I got it on my third. So that was tough to peg. I won't lie.
I had David Nicker around for a interview the other day for the podcast, and he finished third at the Olympics, and he said to me, no one wants to finish third. And I was like, well, actually, the person that finishes fourth wouldn't mind.
That's what I mean. I remember coming back to the athlete village and walking back in, and someone there was like, oh man, I'm so sorry, like fourth, that's the worst place you could get. And I was like, like it hurts, trust me, this really hurts, but I could have no hide it. I could have got injured. I could have, you know, got a lot worse than fourth, but at the end of the day, I think it was the amount of pressure going into that competition. Like, I was a medal prospect, and it was a lower height than we would have thought to medal. But I was actually quite sick leading into the whole Commonwealth Games, which I haven't told many people about, but it's something that I was really sort of struggling with leading into it, and
What were you sick with? Can you share?
Yeah, so it was actually we had World Champs and Commonwealth Games in the same year, so sort of back-to-back, and I delayed. I got a really bad flu, which apparently wasn't COVID. It was some other really weird flu that I had, so we had to delay my flight going over by about a week. Mm-hmm. By the time I got over to Worlds, I was pretty much halving my whole training. I was not able to do a lot of the running sessions. I would do a vault session and finish the vault session or get halfway through it and be like almost shaking on the ground. Like, my body just wasn't ready to get into full exercise after being really sick. So I was leading into Commonwealth Games having less than ideal preparation, half the training I would normally do. I'll try to do a 400 meter warm-up lap, and I'd get about 200 meters in and have to walk back because I was just not in a good way. So I put absolutely everything into my World Champs campaign, made it to the final there, and then just didn't really have much left for Commonwealth Games, which was really difficult.
Seems like fourth is a pretty good result given the circumstances then.
Yeah, when you put everything into perspective, I think. It was 4 metres 45, which was pretty low, but I had just previously done 4 metres 50, and yeah, it wasn't my best result, but given everything, I think it goes to show you do need a semi-decent build into the championships to actually have fitness behind you, let alone the mental clarity to actually get over those sort of heights.
Yeah, 4 metres 45. Yeah, so just for perspective again, your PB is 4.71, which is considerably higher, like 26 centimetres higher.
Yeah.
What for you would be like an easy jump? What's an easy jump? Obviously, 4.71 is getting right up there. That's a tough jump. What's a jump that you could, you know, complete with your eyes shut?
Oh, probably 4.30, 4.40.
Right.
So that goes to show what I normally enter competitions in it, which would be 4 metres 40. 4 metres 45 would be an easy clearance, but a lot of the time it's not that easy. It comes down to what poles you're on, if you're too close on takeoff, where you put your stands, what you decide to actually enter the competition at. So you can be jumping really well and still come out of something with a bad height, and vice versa. So yeah, it's just so technical that
there is so much to the sport. So you have your own poles, like your own special poles. It's not just like a pile of poles and you grab one.
Yeah, no, we've got our own sort of set of poles. Granted, they actually make it to competitions a lot of the time. They're very annoying to travel with. So.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, because you can't like unscrew them or anything. Eh? It's just like one long stick. And how long are they?
So they're about 4.5 meters long, and you have about 8 to 10 that you bring to a competition. So they're in a tube. And
why so many?
So you work through them in the competition. So you'll start on a sort of softer pole, and as you work through the competition, they get stiffer. So same length, you just work through the range. As you have more adrenaline, maybe a faster run, tailwind, and better takeoffs. And so all that comes together, and you probably go through about 5 poles per competition, and you're trying to get on the biggest pole you possibly can, because the higher, the bigger the pole, the higher you jump. Essentially.
What are they worth?
Probably $500 to $1,000 per pole, but then you've got shipping as well if you need to get them over to New Zealand, because they're all being made over in America or in Europe. So
You must spend so many hours waiting at the oversized baggage area when you get off planes.
The amount of hours I've spent in those oversized and asking them every single time. This year, I think my longest was 3 hours after getting off the plane, which from here to Europe, you're looking at 30, 40 hours, and then another 3 hours at the end, trying to just fingers crossed that the Poles have made it. So yeah, that's not the fun part of travel at all.
Yeah, there's videos online of you doing jumps on more than one occasion, actually, where the pole snaps. So you have your run up, you plant the pole in the box, and then it bends and snaps.
Yeah.
One of them, I mean, you had so much momentum from your run that you landed just on the edge of the mat, but you came close to landing on the track.
Yeah.
What are those? How many times has that happened to you?
So I've snapped 5 poles now. Yeah.
Is it terrifying?
It is. It really is. So 2 of them were quite bad, where I fractured my hand. One of them was in 2019, which was a street vault competition underneath the Sky Tower. And, yeah, went to take off and overbent the pole. There must have been a little scratch or a ding in it because it's made out of carbon fiber. So if you get anything on that pole, a lot of the time it can snap under the pressure. Snapped a pole there, which I had to get surgery on my hand and try to come back about 3 months later for World University Games. So that was a whole process in itself. And then 2020, I got lucky. And then 2021, a few months before trying to qualify for the Tokyo Olympics, I snapped another pole and broke my hand and was in a cast. Had to get back from that, yeah, about 8 weeks later. I had 3 opportunities to try qualify for the Tokyo Olympics. And, yeah, given the build-up, wasn't the best, so to say the least.
Sure.
And even the mental, I guess, stress and pressure, like it is a traumatic experience when you snap a pole.
I don't know how you get the confidence to go again after that.
Mm.
Like the first few jumps after that must be, I don't know.
Yeah, it's you slowly ease back into it. Mm. In that period of time where you have not vaulting, there's so much mental skills work that we're doing. So with my psychologist, we're just doing a lot of visualization for months on end. Any time that I would close my eyes and try to visualize a pole vault, the pole would just snap every time. So I had to really train my brain to see a good jump so that when I actually get on the runway, I don't have that fear. Mm. And because I'd snapped 5 at that point, I had to then change different types of poles. So I went from carbon fiber into fiberglass, which are a lot more sturdy and sort of better material for the way that I jump. And I had about 3 weeks to try change onto a different type of pole as well. So
is 5 a lot? Is this sort of half of the course for a pole vaulter, or is 5 quite a lot?
No, 5 is a lot.
Yeah,
I think most. Yeah, I'd be up there. Yeah. I think Eliza's maybe snapped 1 or 2. Imogen has snapped 1, maybe 2. 5 is definitely quite a few. But now we're on these new poles. Should be
so we're good now. You mentioned your sports psychologist. How long have you been seeing a sports psych?
I've been really lucky to be in the high performance system for 7 years now. So started off with one through that system, was with him for about 3-4 years, and then transitioned to a new one where he's mental skills coach. So yeah, I'm lucky enough to be able to see him pretty much whenever I need to. And it's such an important part of the sport, of everything in general. Like, I talk to him about life as well as pole vaulting, because they do intertwine quite a lot. Whenever I need it, and sort of on a needs basis, you don't want to be seeing him too often. But definitely around competition time, it's honing down on what I need. What are the different sort of cues mentally? What is it going to be like going from a training session with 2 people to being in a stadium with 50,000 people sort of clapping and cheering and everything going on? It's quite a difference. Yeah.
Do you find it good though? Like, does a crowd amp you up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely love it.
So you perform better with a crowd?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure if the stats show that, but I am a bit of a show off. Mm. I like to I just like to feel that adrenaline out in a stadium when you have, like I said, like 50,000 people watching you. It's the most incredible feeling. Mm. You get this buzz. You're at the peak of the competition you've been working towards the whole year. Everything is down to that moment, and I just love that sort of pressure, that enjoyment, getting off the mat and having the whole crowd cheering for you. And just it's a different sort of feeling, and that's what I love about the sport. It's the actual adrenaline of pole vaulting, but then when you have the whole crowd amongst it as well, it's
You seem really resilient. Is this something that's sort of inbuilt in just how you are in your DNA, or something that you've had to work for?
I think a bit of both.
Yeah.
I think seeing my brothers and my family and that resilience in that piece, how we're able to get through tough times and come back with that real self-belief and sort of optimism that we will come out better for it. I'm definitely someone who believes in everything happening for a reason, whether that's all coming down to, you know, bigger purpose or something like that. But I think you can only make something happen for a reason if you come out of it and actually learn from it. Mm. So I think for me, it's as I've gotten older, it's like, right, whatever experience I have had, how can I learn from that? And what are the different things that I'm taking from it? Like every single year, there's something new that pops up. and that resilience piece does truly make me stronger, like it does with everyone. And just putting a lot of perspective to it as well. So I think it's easy to get caught in like poor me or catastrophize a lot of situations, which I maybe did a little bit more when I was younger, whereas now it's just finding out what it is that I can take from it and actually enjoying that and knowing that the whole worth isn't connected to performances. It's about who you are as a person, how you bounce back from different situations, because you choose to let things happen for a reason.
Yeah, okay. So, applying this into real terms then. So when you break your hand, snap a pole and break your hand, what's the fucking reason for that? where is the silver lining in that?
Yeah, I think, weirdly enough, looking back on Tokyo, I didn't make the Olympics, but when I was trying to qualify for it, it was something where I snapped the pole at one of the worst times. I was just coming into my peak. In that situation, I think it showed me, one, that I had to change my certain set of poles or I was going to keep getting hurt and I was going to keep possibly snapping poles throughout my career. And two, it just, unfortunately, and this has been a really hard one to come to terms with, it just wasn't my time to go to those Olympics. I wasn't in the right shape. I felt like I was doing everything I possibly could, but there was still so much more that I had to learn and still so much more to become the athlete to actually be worthy to go to the Olympics. It's not, to be an Olympian is such a prestigious thing, and you need to be at the top of your game. And especially in New Zealand with our top 16 philosophy, you have to be worthy to be in top 16, whereas other countries, they can be let in on the top 32 sort of criteria.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a lot harder for us. But at the end of the day, it's one of those things where you do just learn from it. And I think that resilience piece, coming back from a hand injury, changing poles onto a different set, from there was, learning new things.
And are you ready for the Olympics now?
100%.
Yeah.
It literally just makes me fizz thinking about it, because I know that I'm in a place and I will be in a place where I will be worthy and I will be ready to actually compete and not just go to the Olympics, but actually be a competitor at the Olympics. Previously, it would have been just to try make the Olympics or to make a final, whereas now it's actually hoping to make that final and be in that sort of, I don't know, top 8, top 12 sort of category, and possibly even higher. You never know with pole vaulting.
Well, as Eliza proved, like once you get into that sort of final, anything can happen right on the day.
Yeah, anything can happen at all. And so you can have the best of the best go out in no height. You can have some young guns come through and really make it work. And I think when there's not as much expectation on the younger ones, sometimes that's when they excel. Mm. And that's possibly what Eliza did. And you just, watching her compete at those games, she was absolutely just enjoying it and loving it and making the most of it. So I think I want to go there, I want to enjoy the Olympics, I want to soak in that sort of experience, but at the end of the day I do still need to qualify first.
yeah. Do you, Eliza's quite a bit older than you, eh? So is she like a friend or sort of a mentor? Like how would you describe that relationship?
She's been definitely a mentor for me over the years, probably without even knowing it. Like, there hasn't been a direct let's sit down and talk about how this works, or, you know. But my first Commonwealth Games in 2018. Little old, youngest one on the team, 18-year-old Livy. She, to be able to be out there competing with her and see the way that she composes herself within a competition, I was able to learn a lot from.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those big competitions she was there for, and I was able to really see how she works. And then recently we've actually, in Europe, we're living together for 2 or 3 months, and again, just outside of training as well, how she lives and what sort of practices you do outside of it, because it's not just about pole vaulting, it's the nutrition, it's the sleep, it's the day-to-day things that actually go into being a pole vaulter that make the biggest difference. So yeah, I definitely say probably a mentor and teammate.
Yeah.
But we're quite different. Yeah,
in what way?
Just
in terms of personality types.
I think personality types were quite different, which is cool to have. I mean, us two and Imogen, all three different pole vaulters, each have different skill sets. So different skill sets, different sort of outlooks, but still come together for the same reason. Mm. And we're all very competitive as well. I think that confidence piece.
And you, your highest jump 471, you need to jump a 473 to qualify for the Olympics.
Yes.
Tantalizingly close.
So close. So
can,
close.
Can you do it? I mean, I suppose it's like sort of 1% as you're talking about now, but can, surely you can do another couple of centimeters.
Yeah.
Or is it not that easy?
It's another couple of centimeters, but it's consistency.
Yeah.
It's all consistency in the sport. So I've done 4 meters 71 before, which was in March this year, and now I need to do 4 meters 73 or show capability of top 16. So that's maybe a 465 470. But I would love to just jump 473 and know that I'm going to the Olympics. Like, that jump would be the ultimate. So to get the automatic would be the way to do it. It is those little one percenters. It's becoming that true professional athlete, both on and off the field. And so it's practicing that day to day, having that confidence and that belief. But learning from last time, not making the Olympics, I've learned that I can't just be 100% thinking about the Olympics. Like, going into Tokyo, it was the big Osho, all I could think about. And I forgot about the processes, whereas now it's like, let's take it day by day, step by step, know that I'm getting better through my training and have full belief in the system. And the people around me that trust the coaching. And then from there, obviously the outcome.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. How do you not let it become all consuming?
Yeah.
I feel like that's something you can tell yourself, but that's got to be easier said than done, right?
Yeah. Again, I think that comes with experience from last time.
Yeah.
And you need to get this balance between having that dream and something I've looked forward to my whole life and knowing that that is the outcome, to go to the Olympics and to compete well at the Olympics, but to actually come back to those processes and literally just turn up to training day in, day out, put all the work in, without having that as a main driver. Like, that's always going to be in the back of my head, but if it's in the front of my head, then you forget about the rest of it sometimes. So I think, yeah, literally going step by step, enjoying training, enjoying it, whereas before it was not as enjoyable because you're only thinking about one thing, whereas now it's becoming more enjoyable and turning up to training, becoming the best I can be, because I know if I'm being the best that I can be day in, day out, then that will get me to the Olympics. It's not so much, just trying to get to the Olympics, get to the Olympics.
Yeah, funnily enough, where you train at the Millennium Institute, that's actually a saying
that's
on
slogan.
The wall, right? Yeah, be the best you can be.
Yes, it is. And
so you're staring at that on the wall every day.
Yeah, maybe that's why it's so ingrained into me. But at the end of the day, it is. And that's actually one of my reasons why I do what I do. Like, there's two main drivers. One of them is the pure passion and love for going upside down and for pole vaulting and pushing myself. And the second is to be the best I can be, in terms of I want to be able to get to the end of my career knowing that I reached my potential. And I know that my potential could possibly get me a medal at the Olympics.
Mm.
And so it's that feeling, that leaving no stone unturned. If I do everything I can, then I can get there. And yeah, maybe that comes back to that self-belief. And I know it's maybe not talked about as much because we've got this whole tall poppy syndrome in New Zealand. But
oh, yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What's your perspective and thoughts on that?
I'm not sure. I think it's one of those things where no one's going to criticise you for doing worse than them. they're only going to criticize you if they're doing better.
Mm.
And you can't let that stop you. A lot of the time people almost want this chip on their shoulder. They want, you know, like a little bit of that I proved everyone wrong sort of mentality. Whereas for me, I've actually been really lucky to have a lot of belief in my system and a lot of people around me who support me and actually build me up. Whereas, yeah, a lot of the time in New Zealand, it can be a little bit of that that sort of like humble side of it. You can't talk as much about the confidence. It's like if you're too confident or arrogant, then maybe that's through. But
oh, she loves herself or she rates herself, that sort of thing. I because, you know, I look back on my life and I was always so scared of doing things, you know, for failing, really. I was scared of failure. And as I've got older, I've embraced it more and more because, you know, trying stuff and failing is it's a stepping stone to success.
Yeah.
And it's so important. But, yeah, a lot of that fear of failure was probably just fear of embarrassment or, you know, people that didn't like me laughing at me. And it's like, fuck those people.
Exactly.
You know, and I regret now letting that sort of mentality hold me back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough one to deal with for sure. One of my favorite quotes is, your desire for success must be greater than your fear of failure.
Mm.
And so I think learning over time that if you're always scared of what other people think or scared of failing, whatever this definition of failing is as well, like if you're the one going out there and putting everything into it, than those on their couches who are doing possibly, you know, not as much with their lives. They're trying to criticize you because they haven't maybe lived up to their dreams. They're not doing all the things, putting themselves out there. So I think, yeah, it's an interesting one to deal with. And I think that confidence all the time, like in society, especially lately, we're talking about love yourself and like create this image that you want to be and have that confidence. And then suddenly when you do have that confidence or you do have the self-love, people are like, oh, they just really love themselves. And it's like you can't really win either side. So I think you'd rather win or lose on the other side of putting yourself out there and doing what you want to do and actually giving it a go because you're going to miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Like it's
absolutely. Easier said than done. Actually, an extension on that one. So the NBA, they've got like the highest – you know, point scorer list and also like the worst list, like the shooters that have missed the most shots. And most of the names are the same on both lists. Like Kobe's on the worst list, LeBron, MJ. And that's the point. Like you take the shots and you're going to miss a lot as well.
Yeah.
You've got a really good attitude on that. I feel like a lot of people probably, a lot of New Zealanders probably find, I don't know, maybe your confidence or self-assuredness like intimidating. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I was told even from a young age, my friends didn't tell me this until much later on, but they were like, yeah, we were actually really intimidated of you. And it's because in PE class, I'd be trying to beat all the boys. I'd be putting absolutely everything into it. I mean, you know, that 10-year-old who's got that 8-pack, who's just like trying to beat the boys and everything. But I really try and embrace that. Like, I grew up with two older brothers. I was always trying to do what they were doing. And I don't think there should be this huge separation. And it's getting a lot better now where, you know, there's more females in sport being powerful women, and so they should be. So I think if you have that confidence and that self-belief, like, you're going places. Like, that – and again, it takes a long time to sort of understand that. And I think as you get older and listening to a lot of other people around me, that kind of just happens. You start – giving less of a shit as you get older.
You have to. And the sooner you get to that point, the better your life's going to be. You can't let other people's opinions, whether it's real or whether it's just in your own mind, like stop you or hold you back. Are you annoyingly competitive with absolutely everything you do, like board games?
I'm one of those people. Unashamedly. But
is that a family thing?
I think it's a family thing. Yeah. Monopoly with our family. I mean, you get Cam pretty much flipping the table. So he's like, that's not how it works. But yeah, it's kind of possibly in the DNA there a little bit as well. Yeah. But I love it. Like it makes life fun. It makes it enjoyable. And I try not be too serious about it. Like I don't get all stroppy if I lose. It's just, I don't know, putting everything into what you do. And there are a lot of things that I'm not good at as well. growing up with gymnastics, there was zero ball sport coordination that went into it. So I definitely had to yeah, unteach a lot of the things and change that self-talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I've found from doing this podcast almost 2 years now is that the only cheat code there is really is hard work.
Mm.
That's all there is to it. So, yeah, you try and just work hard at whatever it is you're doing. So, when you're training hard. When you're playing Monopoly, you're playing hard.
Exactly. It's that sort of balance. And, yeah, I was lucky enough to have my mum sort of instill that self-belief in me and my dad instill the hard work. So I got a good balance between the two. But, yeah, again, like, the more you put in, the more you get out. Mm. And a lot of the cliches are true for a reason. Yeah. As you know, like, that hustle mentality is gets you places. Like
100%. Yeah. Oh, speaking of your dad, on your Instagram, there was a recent post you put up. I've got it here. Striving to make that little girl proud. So much changes growing up, perceptions, ideas, outlooks, as it should. But one thing that remains the same is that little girl with a dream to be an Olympian, Paris 2024. And then your dad, John McTaggart, underneath. Little Liv is very proud indeed, and so is your dad.
Yeah.
Love heart emoji. How cool is that?
It's so cool. Like, his support has been incredible throughout my whole journey. He's there through the ups and downs. That 471 jump, he was there for on his birthday as well, which was cool. But, yeah, he's been there, and he knows everything that we go through, especially with Cam as well. So,
Yes. Lucky. So who? What siblings have you got? So there's your brother Cam, that's the Olympian, the weightlifter.
Yes.
And is there another brother?
There is another brother. Yeah. Yes, Nathaniel. So he's what we say the brains of the family.
Is he not sporty?
Not as sporty. He loves his board sports and snowboarding, surfing, everything like that. But he's very non-competitive. He says, I don't understand how you go through that pressure situation. Like, I feel nervous even watching you. And I'm like, yeah, okay, we're definitely from...
Adopted.
We have made that joke a few times. Although he says that to me and vice versa.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a biomedical engineer and he works in 3D printing. So he's looking to start his own 3D printing association. We're very proud of him in that way as well, but he's currently living in Canada.
Oh my God, a family of overachievers. Wow.
A family of just working hard and, yeah, enjoying what we do. But I think that self-belief and saying that we can do anything we wanted to do is both a good thing, but also it meant we were so hard on ourselves to actually, like, try get what we feel like we could do. But
yeah, what is your inner voice like? Are you always sort of I mean, like, outwardly you're very, very confident. Are you quite kind to yourself, or are you just constantly, like, whipping yourself?
Oh, it's changed over the years as well. I used to say that being hard on myself was both my biggest strength and my biggest weakness, because when I was younger I would get so hard on myself after a competition to the point where I remember one time, and it will never happen again, but our whole team went out for dinner afterwards, and I said, I don't deserve dinner. Like, I didn't do well enough in this competition, which that's when I realized I need to do something about that. Like, that is not a good mentality to have. Sustainable. It's not sustainable at all. So
we're not healthy either.
It's not healthy. Mm. And so I had to change that quite a bit to the point where now I'm a lot kinder on myself in better ways. Like, I try attach something practical to it. Like, okay, that wasn't a good competition. I didn't do A, B, and C. How can I make those weaknesses better? How can I find those gaps where I can improve on it? And, I mean, it still hurts. That fourth place at Commonwealth Games was a tough one to take. And and I think coming away from that and, like, having a few of those misses, I've had two fourth places on count back now, you realize it's not the end of the world, and you kind of change this perspective into it's not life or death. Sport is not life or death. It's this amazing vehicle where you're able to express every single emotion and feeling out of it, and I think that's incredible for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But your worth is not attached to whatever outcome it is. I think there was a lot of pressure on me at a young age, and then when I underperformed a couple times, I realized it wasn't the worst thing in the world, and I just had to realize what it is I needed to do to get better and then come back from that each time. So this sort of cycle of just resilience and trying to quiet in that part in my head which is saying you're not good enough, or why didn't you do this, you should have been better. A lot of should have sort of talk, rather than just, you know, like, what can you be doing, or there's no should, like, where's this sort of self-talk coming from. And self-talk is a huge one I've changed over the years. So even now where I say, you know, I'm just not you know, I'm, I don't know, some things in the past where I might have said, I didn't think that I was a world-class vaulter at the time. It's like, I'm not a world-class vaulter yet. Okay, well, I'm not Olympian yet, or... Yeah, a lot of those things were...
Just change the phrasing.
It changed the phrasing.
Is that something you got from the sports psychologist? Is that like a trick? Yeah.
Yeah, he reminds me of it every single time. Mm. And our team meetings as well. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm just not as strong with my upper body, or I really need to work on this skill, or I've never been good at my last step in my takeoff. And he's like, well, yeah, not yet. Or that's something that you can be working on. Rather than just having this whole thing of I'm not this. And this happens all the time, I think, in general, where people say, oh, I'm just not a reader, or I'm just not one of those kind of people, or I'm just not a, I'm just not someone who exercises, I'm not an athlete. It's like, if you keep telling yourself that, you won't be. If that's something that you actually want to do, then you change the perspective and say, okay, well, I'm not that sort of person yet, or this is something that I want to actually work on, rather than just becoming this like fixed mentality. It's that open mindset you need.
I've been reading a book about that called I think it's called Mindset, actually, and it talks about the difference between like a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. Every day is a chance to become that person. Like you can literally go from being a non-reader to being a reader.
It's
up to you.
I did that in the last year. I was one of those kids who would never read. Like, you go to the library and I'd get the Guinness Book of World Records or something. I'm like, I'm not reading a book. Like, I'll read a magazine maybe, but I'm going to watch movies. And my mum always wanted me to be a reader until probably the last 2 years, where I'm now reading, like, you know, 20-plus books and actually having that want to learn more in, like, different areas.
What sort of books do you read?
A bit of both. So what have I done this year? The Monk Who Stole His Sold His Ferrari, really good one. So a little bit of the sort of philosophy side I'm delving more into and really enjoying it, like a bit of more life outlook.
Yeah.
Atomic Habits.
How good is that?
Yeah, it's a good one, really good. And just a lot of those sort of, I guess you would call them self-help. But
I love those books.
Yeah? Yeah. What's your favourite one? What would you recommend?
Always reading them. I probably have a thing called like recency bias. So it tends to be the book you're working on at the moment. At the moment, it's a book called Relentless. It's about this, from this guy called Tim Grover, who was like the mental skills coach for Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, and it's just really, really good. And you just realise that those guys, the thing they had was just fucking hard work. You know, going to the gym 3 times a day, you know, practicing before anyone else. And it's like you realise these people got to the top of their games by being absolute fucking savages.
Yeah, there's a huge part of that, I think. Yeah, just listening to other people and other athletes, like that hard work is a massive part of it. But there's, so much more that goes on behind the scenes as well.
What does your week look like? Because I'm guessing you're not pole vaulting every day. There must be a lot of time in the gym and a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, so usually it would be pole vaulting only 2 times a week because it's very load intensive, both upstairs and on the body. And then we're in the gym 3 times a week and then running 2 times a week. And then there's normally like a hybrid gymnastics sort of session in there with a little bit of weights, body weight work, going upside down as well.
So when you do the pole vaulting sessions, like how many jumps do you do? I've had Hamish Kerr here, the high jumper.
Yeah.
And he, similar sort of routine with his week, and he only does like, I think it's like half a dozen jumps.
Yeah, we would do... We work back in different run-ups, so we'd start on 4-step and make our way back to full run-up, 16, 18. But roughly 20 to 25 jumps.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, which can be quite a lot. That would be a big session.
Wow, that's heaps.
Yeah, yeah.
And for the running sessions, do you run with a pole?
We do.
Actually?
Yeah. So
like a sprint.
A pole vault is just sprinting with a pole, really. For the first half of it, anyway.
I just can't imagine how awkward it is, especially when you start, like running with that big giant pole.
Imagine running with your hands on your head and just down the street, just running. It feels so awkward, and that's very similar with a pole. But because we need, the faster you are, the higher you'll jump as well, and the bigger pole you'll be on. So you need to close that gap between running with a pole and without a pole. And I've got it pretty close to this point, which is pretty wild to think that me running with a pole versus without a pole is like a very close difference.
So if you and Zoe Hobbs had a sprint and you were both carrying poles, do you reckon you could take her?
Ooh, I would love to see that.
With a pole.
I think possibly. Possibly. We could put her in some flats as well. I'll go on spikes with a pole. She can go.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. And how do you feel about your body? You mentioned before some concerns about your upper body not being strong enough or whatever. And
yeah.
You've mentioned having an 8-pack when you were 10. What's your body image like?
Yeah, I think it's, again, changed quite a lot over the years. As a young athlete, sort of put into the scene on TV and Commonwealth Games and everything at 18 years old, it was quite a lot for me, coming out of the Commonwealth Games with this sort of new image as an athlete, and a lot of people sort of seeing that and possibly objectifying it at the age of 18, 19 was quite a tough thing to go through at such a young age.
Just because I suppose you're sort of self-conscious in a way.
Either way, even if people are saying good things, they're not good things, if that makes sense. Like, it's a lot.
Just saying you're hot or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I watched some YouTube clips with you on, and you don't have to scroll very deep into the comments to find a lot of fairly icky things.
Exactly. And so I struggled with that at a young age. I remember just sort of chilling, and someone at the time came in and had a chat to me, and they were like, hey, you've got a million views on it on YouTube. And I was like, oh, cool, off my pole vaulting, that's awesome. I go on there, and it's just someone objectifying me on YouTube, and it was, very icky and makes me feel quite uncomfortable, especially from that young age. And then sort of as I got older, it's sort of learning how to deal with that and going from being a teenager into being an early 20s athlete, that does change. And I think getting stronger, more powerful, slightly bigger built, I struggled with that for a little bit because it's not your typical female body and being a strong sort of woman. And that has had to change the view and the outlook on it over time. And I really hope that a lot of other, girls and women are able to feel confident in their body being strong. And there's all this thing of, oh, I don't want to go to the gym because then I'll get big muscles. It's I want to go to the gym so I get big muscles.
It's funny that, eh? An ex-girlfriend of mine, she's like, oh no, I don't want to have any protein shakes. So, come on, you're not gonna get muscles overnight.
Also, you're not gonna get massive muscles just from,
doing one set of curls. If only that was that easy.
Yeah, exactly. And this shift just sort of happened when I was probably my heaviest when I jumped 4m71. And seeing that and knowing that I was strong and powerful and I started to get some good quads on me and actually become a powerful athlete, I started eating and training to fuel my body for my sport rather than for looks. And it's so easy, and with social media nowadays as well, I think a lot of both men and women, guys and girls, can fall into this trap of not fueling themselves properly and skipping breakfast or skipping lunch, and jokes happening about all these sort of things where it's so detrimental to their health, and I think they don't quite understand it. So for doing a little bit in the women in sport health space, where we're talking more about nutrition and how to be fueling yourself properly, and a lot of the research has been done on men and hasn't really looked into the effects on women. And I think that's where a space can kind of change a little bit, and we can see more of that coming through now, which is awesome. But I just think in general, this whole self-love and powerful, confident women really need to be learning how they can come into their own and not being criticized for that, because I know with social media, I couldn't even imagine being 14, 15, 16, 17 now with the influence that social media has. It's a space I've sort of dealt with on and off a little bit more, and even talking to other athletes and athletes at the top of their game, like medalists that I've talked to before, and they still go through these sort of issues. And it's finding what works for you and training for being thankful for your body. It allows you to do what you do, rather than criticizing it. And again, it's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah.
But
Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, you're very wise, eh? Yeah, very wise.
I don't feel 23, honestly. It's
Yeah, well, you feel older?
I feel older. I think I've been around people that are a little bit older than me, and I had to grow up at such a young age. Mm. Like, I think 16, 17 is when I was sort of thrust into a little bit of the limelight in Eliza's footsteps because of what she did. I sort of had to, become this grown-up at a younger age, and now I'm just like a sponge. I'm just taking so many things from other people around me, and I feel so grateful I have those sort of role models in my life to look up to. And even just going to the gym and seeing like Dame Valerie Adams and Dame Lisa and everyone sort of there, all these strong, powerful women and men, and just being able to be like, cool, like I'm kicking it with these guys and I'm learning from them and we've all got different stories. Yeah, it's really awesome.
Yeah, do you feel, when you're around those guys, like Dame Val, Dame Lisa, do you feel like a peer, or do you feel like an imposter in a way? Like, oh my God.
Depends what scenario, I think, sometimes. So I'm lucky enough to be a Toyota ambassador, and so I sort of come on as the younger athlete in that space to give them that sort of edge, whereas we turn up to these dinners where there's Valerie and Lisa, and I'm just, and David Dobbin, and I'm just like, how am I in this scenario right now? It's insane. But then I go to the gym and I feel like I can so easily talk to them, and they've become like really cool acquaintances for me at this point. Like, Valerie has taught me so much over the years, and literally if I had a problem, she would she'd be there for me to, and she has literally got a piece of paper and said, look, this is how we're going to look at this issue. Like, this is what I had in my career. How can you be taking that forward? And same with Lisa. I've caught up with her for coffee, and she's talked to me about her journey. So genuinely just being that open growth mindset to take in as much as I can. Like, it'd be silly not to in the position I am.
Oh my God, what great role models.
Yeah.
That's so cool to hear.
And Eliza, like being right there as well. So many people around me,
Yeah, that's neat. It's been a big year for you. I'm not sure how much you want to talk about this, but you can talk about it in as much or as little detail as you want. But Jeremy, who was your coach and Eliza's coach and Imogen's coach, sort of the head of pole vaulting New Zealand, he was banned from 10 years for 10 years for serious misconduct. I mean, it must have been a big upheaval for you. Like, you mentioned his name earlier. Like, he came to your school and introduced you to the sport. So he's been the only coach you've ever known.
Yes.
Must have been a very unsettling year, quite triggering for you guys.
Yeah, it was a very intense year. It all happened in a very short amount of time. So it was after we finished the season and came back into it, and was about to get ready for our world champs, and it all sort of struck at once, and a lot of things were being brought up from years ago, and he's not perfect, but at the end of the day, he built up New Zealand pole vault for what it is. I think the media really dragged him under more than he possibly should have. I think, it was a very tough time for all of us to go through, not knowing whether he was going to come over to world champs with us or not. He's done so much for the sport. He's been New Zealand pole vault for 10 plus years, and mine and Eliza's coaches along with everyone else. So I think that shift was something all of us in the whole pole vault group, no matter those that were affected the least to the most, had to deal with what this may look like afterwards. So it happened so close to me going overseas, where I was told, you know, very shortly before going over, that James, one of our teammates at the time, would then be our coach for the next 3 months, which he had never coached me before. He did such an amazing job given the circumstances. So all props to him for that. We were all just thrust into these different roles without knowing. But I think months of trying to push that down and then getting back home and not competing how I wanted to at Worlds, it was a lot to take in. But again, when I was even over in Europe, I was listening to so many other stories from other pole vaulter athletes and realizing they've all gone through similar sort of experiences in terms of, one of them left their coach a week before going over to world champs. Another one moved her whole life over to a certain state to then leave that coach because it didn't work out. So pole vaulting is very niche. You don't find that many many good coaches in pole vaulting that yeah, that available really. So it was just finding out the next steps from there. And yeah, it was a very tough year though, to say the least. And unfortunately at World Champs, I didn't perform how I wanted to. So that didn't add on to it. And the day after World Championships, it was right, I don't have a coach. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know how this is going to work. And had a little bit of a meltdown the day after competition, just everything not properly processing, which you need to definitely put a high price on. Bottling yeah. up is it's, too
it's,
common.
It's a lot. In the lead up to it, were there any sort of like murmurings or rumblings, or did it come as sort of like a shock out of the blue?
More so a shock out of the blue in terms of what possibly could have come from this, like him possibly losing his job.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be something that they'd look into, but I didn't know the extent of where we'd get to with it. So, yeah. Yeah, it was, a lot.
Yeah, it's rough. I'm like, from an athlete's perspective, it's a lot for you guys.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Both Eliza and I, Jeremy was turning up to trainings all the way through, and got to commend him for that, and still turning up and giving us everything. And we just didn't know whether we were going to have him at World Championships or not. And to be fair, again, we were supported very well through everyone in that space, through Athletics NZ, our whole team as well. Mm. It's not something easy to go through on all parties. Mm. So,
well, I think it's nice and even courageous of you to speak highly of him. There's, Lance Armstrong, the cyclist, you know, the disgraced cyclist. He talks about people leaning in or leaning out. Mm. So when the shit hit the fan for him, he said there were very, very few people that leaned in. Mm. Most people, and people that you thought would lean in, would actually lean out.
Yeah.
So it'd be very easy for you just to distance yourself completely. So the fact that you're saying nice things about him from your experience, obviously that's not everyone else's experience, but that's your personal experience. I think that's really generous of you.
Yeah, I think we all make mistakes, we all screw up sometimes, and a lot of the time they should be persecuted for as well. Mm. But we are human at the end of the day, and the experiences that I had personally, they weren't the same as other people. So I think, again, you can't take that human side away from it, and he did so much for the sport. I wouldn't be where I am today without him. And I know a lot of people had different experiences, and that's fair for them to put that forward. And the result is what it is. But yeah, at the end of the day, we just sort of had to roll with the punches with that one. And move on from it.
Jeez, it's not a career for the faint, is it?
It's not. It really isn't.
Like there's some extreme highs, like finishing fourth at the Commonwealth Games or potentially going to the Olympics, but some very, very deep lows as well.
Yeah, and like I mentioned before, sport in general gives you all of that. It provides everything for you, and that's why I love it, and that's why it's one of the hardest things to go through at the time as well. And a lot of the public don't see what goes on behind the scenes. They see the medals, the accolades, or they see the failures, so to say, and they don't understand what goes on behind it. But we're all human. Like, we're all just like everyone else. We have our own life struggles that we go through. But for us, we need to drop them at the door before we go into our training sessions and put everything into that rather than dwelling on it, which can be really difficult at times. There are few sessions that I've had to walk away from because it's been too much, which doesn't happen often, but maybe should happen more. And we're seeing that with the likes of Simone Biles walking away from the Olympics, and sort of controversy around that, and mental health being more of a topic that's talked about. And so it should be, because sport pushes you to your absolute max, both mentally and physically.
There's so much to it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like, I suppose even if you have a bad training session, like, you must go home and just be questioning your ability, or just all sorts of things. I can't imagine what goes through your mind.
Yeah, it's when you have both training and life not going well that it becomes really difficult. You're always striving to have both of them going really well, and you can be at the peak, which for me was actually probably a month ago, where everything was going so well. Everything was going smoothly, vaulting was going really well, making technical changes that I hadn't made in years, Life was really good as well. I was happy doing my own thing, and then I get an injury, and so injuries come into it at the most randomest of times. And again, sometimes they happen for a reason, and we try attach something to it again. But yeah, it's having that time to actually process it. I think that's one of the most important things. People can just feel something, move on, and then it always, it's going to catch up to you at some point. So processing it within, you know, the time that you need to is so important, or else it's just going to come back to bite you. And we all process in different ways.
So, well, I guess pole vaulting is going to be your life for the and your career for the foreseeable future. But do you know what's next? You know, what's after that? Put any thought into that? You're doing papers, eh? You're doing a degree?
Yes, I am. So I'm quite
excited. By the way, I don't know how you fit it all in. It's a lot.
It is a lot. It can be. So I work for Drug Free Sport New Zealand as an educator. So I've definitely taken on more of a role in the youth education space. So I really enjoy going to schools and teaching them about values and morals and steering them away from doping or cheating and just being in that space where they can be learning these things at a younger age so that they don't need to be playing catch up and they can be really supported. So I love talking to the young athletes and people there. So I've got that going for me. And then also I'm going to my sixth year of university studying a Bachelor of Sport and Exercise.
How many years should it take?
Three.
Well, I mean, yeah, cut yourself some slack.
Yeah,
you've had other shit going on.
Yeah, so I'm just chipping away at that. But yeah, hopefully I will then finish that degree. And then within the world of sport, there's so much that we can be doing. So I'm lucky enough to not really feel like I'm going to have too much trouble in that space. Like, I just have this belief that I know through sport I'm going to find something else that I can enjoy. But again, I've talked to a lot of athletes that have already retired, and there's not much that can replicate it, obviously. And so it's just finding something afterwards. I know I want to be working with youth athletes in some way and having some support for them in that space, because there's such a high drop-off rate around those sort of teen high school years where they just need more support and they need to grow the sport more. So something in that space. We'll see. Yeah.
Whatever you do, I've got no doubt that you're going to do well.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've heard in an interview you talk about the three P's.
Oh, yes.
Passion, persistence and pride.
Yeah.
Do you want to go into some detail about that?
Yes.
Where does this come from, by the way? Is this something you came up with yourself?
I think it was for an interview or something where they sort of just came up, and I know that passion is one of my favourite values and something that I keep really true to me, passion in everything that I do, whether that's sport or outside of sport as well. I just love to have that optimism and passion for what I do. Persistence goes back to that, I guess, like determination as well, and having that resilience piece, because I know that's a huge part of me and something that I'll always have. And then pride from all levels, whether it's being out on the world stage wearing New Zealand on my chest, McTaggart on my back, having that pride wearing the New Zealand fern, the silver fern, and trying to use all three of those values to guide me through. We do a lot of work with my life advisor, performance life coach, through High Performance Sport, where we create the identity outside of sport as well, which I'm learning is just as important, if not more.
Yeah, what is that? What is that identity?
Yeah, so it's about being a great human first and a great athlete second. I have this fear as I've gotten older that there's a possibility I'll achieve everything I want to, but not feel all of that excitement and elation from it and have this sort of down or feeling lost afterwards. I don't want to get to where I want to be and not have that feeling and feel lost because of it, because I know a lot of athletes as well, their stories have sort of mentioned a little bit around that. I want to get to the end knowing that I've put everything I can into being a good human and doing the absolute best that I can, both on and off the field, because a gold medal doesn't mean that much if you're not the person that's attached to it. So,
it's like a gold medal with a gold medalist, but you're an asshole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, no one, that doesn't mean nearly as much. And so, again, like, I was listening to a podcast the other day, Jay Shetty, and he talked about the difference between passion and purpose. And so passion is what gets you up every morning, what you're excited about, sort of that fuel to the fire sort of thing. And purpose is how you can serve others through your passion. So I think there's one where sport can sometimes feel quite selfish, but if you're able to have a purpose to it, and for me that's hopefully inspiring a lot of other people through what I do, and also giving back in the women's health space and drug-free sport in New Zealand. And again, getting older, understanding how much more important that is to attach to it as well, like, because it can feel quite selfish, but giving back is so important, and I think that's something that I'm sort of delving into a little bit more now, which creates our identity outside of it, because if you have your whole worth and everything on the line to get this gold medal or Olympic medal, and you get there at the end, then what? A lot of people fall to pieces after that because they've achieved what they wanted to and now they don't know what to do with it. I want to be able to keep going sustainably in the sport, whether I get a gold medal or not, just because I enjoy it.
Yeah, and you have to enjoy the process, eh? I suppose that's crucial, because there's no guarantee of that gold medal.
There's so much out of your control, and so it's focusing on what you can control. It's focusing on, like I mentioned before, that process over outcome, the training over the Olympics, and that's always going to be there. The outcome is always there. It doesn't get taken away. It's, again, just the cliches run true. It's about the journey, and it's not about the destination. You get there when you're focusing so much on the journey, the destination comes, whether that's in sport, whether that's in life, the whole notion of, you always find that person when you're not looking for it. And it's just, focusing on you and what it is that makes you happy, and then all the good things come after that. It's like good karma, and just having that tunnel vision and what you want.
Yeah, 100%. I noticed you got some words on your phone as well. What's on your phone case? Is that another quote?
It's process over outcome.
Process over, oh my God.
Yep.
Yeah, so you're constantly reminding yourself of all this stuff.
Yes, I am. I am. I think I'm a very visual person. So whether it's on my phone case, process over outcome was my, mantra, you could say, for this year when I was over in Europe leading into the World Champs, and also for the Olympics. And then recently I actually printed out a little poster of Paris to put on my bedside table so that every morning that I wake up I can see Paris and know that that's what I'm working towards. And again, that's the outcome, but then you got to have that there as well. It's something to look back on, and that dream is there. That's what fuels a lot of why we do what we do, as well as the process and enjoying it.
Yeah. What about your necklace? I just noticed your necklace. Yes. That is a silver fern. What's the story behind that?
So I actually got this from my mum and my brother when I got my New Zealand citizenship, which was the first time I actually competed for New Zealand, which was at a young age. I think I was 16 for the Australian Junior Championships. And so I wear it every single day around my neck, just to bring me back to, I guess, those roots and where I'm from. And wearing the silver fern now, but then also when I'm out on the world stage, is like, I guess, when you qualify for a world team or an Olympics, you're competing for the silver fern as well as the country. So yeah, it's just something that I carry with me. I'm quite a sentimental person as well. I am. We don't know about tattoos yet. We'll get there eventually.
You've got to get the Olympic rings, don't you? Is that mandatory if you qualify for the Olympics? You got to.
Yeah, yeah. So my brother's got his Olympic rings on his forearm. And we were hoping to obviously both go to Tokyo and get matching ones, whatever. But the Olympic rings.
Has he qualified for Paris yet?
No, so he's not going to go for the Paris Olympics. He's got the title of Olympian. He worked so hard for that. Weightlifting is a sport that is very, unfortunately, heavily tarnished by drugs as well. And so he's going there. He would be going there to compete his best, and he did so well at the last ones that I think the amount of money it takes to get there, unfortunately, weightlifting doesn't have funding behind them. So that's, for me, brought really good perspective as well. Like, we see so many other sports that are given a lot more money, but then I'm able to see other athletes like my brother and amongst many others where they don't get any funding as well. So it's easy to be like, oh, look what everyone else has got, but then it's like, okay, well, look how much we get compared to others as well. So
yeah. Do you get like a salary or a retainer or anything from high performance sport? What do you get?
So there is what we call a TAPS, so it's a tailored athlete pathway system. And so there are different levels to it. So you get on a certain level and there's, a small, very small amount. Very grateful. But no, through Athletics New Zealand as well. Athletics New Zealand are able to give us campaign budget.
Because you can't really have a job, can you?
Not really. Drug-free sport is on sort of contract where I'm able to.
I mean, in terms of like the work that's required to get to that Olympic level, the training that's required and the rest and recovery after that, like there's just not time for you to have employment.
There isn't. There really isn't. I know some athletes that still do it and you see how much better they could be doing without it as well. And I mean, some of them juggle it so well and I commend them to that. But at the end of the day, if you're being a full-time athlete, that is sort of where you're going to be getting those extra gains. You're going to be putting in those 1%ers, having more time during the day to actually put it in. So, not quite enough space to have a proper, I guess you'd say, 9-to-5 job, fitting in training with that, which can make it a little bit difficult, even with the funding. It's a space I'm trying to look into a little bit more with having some sponsors and some backing around me in the next few years leading into Paris. So,
Brilliant. Are there any sponsors that you want to give a shout-out to on the podcast? Toyota. I know you're with Toyota.
Yes, so I'm giving Toyota a shout-out in general because they've been with me for almost 5 years now, since I was 18 years old, and they're incredible. Absolutely love the team there, and they've supported my whole journey. I'm with Adidas as well, on sort of like a development-level contract there. My ultimate dream is to have Red Bull as a sponsor. And the reason for that is they only pick the best of the best athletes. So I know that I need to get the top of the top level to be able to take that through. But
you're manifesting. This is manifesting, right?
This is manifesting. I've manifested so much. Alicia Loverich, our photographer, has taken so many photos of me sipping Red Bull. Every single competition I have a Red Bull. And we have pretty much a whole album of me drinking Red Bull. And like the day that I get sponsored... But no, I think in general, a big thing for me is having a two-way sponsorship. Well, maybe not sponsorship, but a two-way sort of thing where I'm able to give the brand something and then vice versa.
Yeah, it's like a collaborative effort.
It's collaborative, yeah. And I think I need to like know the people behind the brand really well too. Like it's one thing being sponsored by a brand, but not really knowing everyone behind it. And it comes back to that giving back side of it. Like I want to be able to be part of a team and a brand where we can be working together really well and supporting that, and I'm able to use their image on the world stage and vice versa. So
Red Bull must really look after their athletes. I've noticed Hayden Wild, whenever he finishes a triathlon, before he does any interviews, he quickly puts like a Red Bull hat on or a headband, and so it's like he's going the extra mile for them, so they must be looking after him.
Yeah, they would be. I think headwear is their main thing, so
Just a couple of quick things to finish on. So we've established that you're a very, very competitive person with everything you do, but I read something about you, and I'm calling bullshit on this. You were playing darts once, and you got 3 bullseyes in a row?
No, that's true. That's true.
No way!
Yep. Wow. So that was back in... I feel like that was almost around lockdown time, and I was playing darts so much. Like, I'm nowhere near as good as them now. Like, not, like, in a row, but in a round, yeah. So, yeah, that one's...
Oh, that's pretty good. That could be a sport for you to try after pole vaulting. Very, very easy on the back.
It would be easier on the back. I'm weirdly good at your classic sort of pub-style sports, so, like, darts... Not as good.
Like pool?
And we have a pool table at home. My dad has taught me very well. And so I like to hustle the boys a little bit there and be like, I'm okay. I'm not that good. And boom, 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 and beat them. So
amazing. And the other thing, I think this might be the only thing you and I have in common.
Yes.
Favorite karaoke song?
Oh, karaoke song?
Yeah.
Are we thinking of Thunderstruck here? Is that the one?
Well,
that...
Oh, no. Well, okay, we've got nothing in common then.
Oh, which one was it?
It was All Star by Smash Mouth.
Yes. Yeah. No, that would be the karaoke. Maybe it's
in an interview years ago.
No, that's a karaoke song. Mm. Thunderstruck is my pump-up song.
Oh, is it?
But yeah.
Do you like pump-up song that you listen to before an event? Or yeah.
Every single competition, I have to listen to Thunderstruck. And it's always the last song I listen to before I get to the track. So it annoys any of my teammates who are in the car with me. I'm like, guys, we have to turn it on now. I'm like, how far away are we from the track? We need to put Thunderstruck on.
Well, what a great! Have you got like a hype playlist or is it just the one song?
I have the pump up playlist. Yep, so that's my comp.
Right. What are some other tracks on it?
Oh, Bleed It Out. By Linkin Park. We've got Thunderstruck in there, a little bit more Akadaka.
Australians coming out now.
It is. What else have we got? I'm trying to sway it into more like fun songs, so it's like happy and upbeat, whereas when I was younger it was like just trying to be this real like intense sort of athlete. But yeah, with Linkin Park, Akadaka, what else have we got in there? You're gonna go Far Kid, that's a good one. I don't remember.
I'll have to look it up in my own time. Where does the love of ACDC? Is that from your dad, the love of ACDC? Seems weird that a girl in her 20s is into ACDC.
I would never listen to it outside of certain circumstances, but I don't know. I think my brother was listening to it one time, and I just wanted to add it to my playlist. Mm. And then when I was a kid, I would listen to YouTube montage playlists of, you know, those really intense ones on YouTube where they're talking about, like, motivation. Mm. And, Linkin Park was in that, so I was like, I'm going to take that one. And there's some that just stick. Like I say, I'm quite sentimental, so I like to keep the same sort of routines.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, well, Liv McTaggart, best of luck for what the year brings, hopefully Paris. Mm. If you make it to Paris, the goal would be to like to make the finals?
When I make it to Paris?
Oh, you win. Sorry, did I say if?
No, this is my self-talk because I'm hearing my sports like inside me going. But yeah, sorry, what was it?
The goal, the dream for the year.
Oh, the dream for the year. To be an Olympic finalist.
Yeah,
I've written that one down many times. I'm a big believer in writing things down and sort of manifesting them to happen, obviously with everything else as well. So, to be an Olympic finalist.
Yeah, well, we'll eagerly watch your progress this year. So 471 is your current personal best. And we need a 473.
Yep.
Two centimetres. You can do this.
I've got it. Two centimetres. We'll get there.
Maybe listen to Thunderstruck twice.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Liv McTaggart on the Dom Harvey podcast. What a legend, eh? What a fantastic young New Zealander, and we wish you all the best at the Paris Olympics later this year. If you don't do so already, give Liv a follow on Instagram. She's very active on there and shares her progress and everything she's up to. She's bloody inspiring. If you have any feedback, guest suggestions, constructive criticism, complaints, whatever, you can get hold of me anytime you want, domharveynz@gmail.com or on Instagram, domharveynz. I appreciate all the feedback from you guys. I genuinely don't know what I'm doing. I'm doing the best I can. So any suggestions you have for how we can make the show better, I do appreciate them. And guest suggestions are always welcome. A lot of the guests I've had on the podcast so far, I've only been made aware of them thanks to you guys. Just before we go, massive thanks to the sponsors who made this episode possible, Radix and Generate. If I could ask one massive favour from you guys, it would be that you consider some supporting these brands, because without them, this podcast just simply would not be possible week in, week out. Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of chart-topping long-term performance. If you want to make sure you're making the most of your KiwiSaver account, chat to an advisor now. Head to generatekiwisaver.co.nz/getadvice. And Radix. Radix nutritional products are plain and simply world class. I start every day with a protein shake made with Radix powder. Sometimes I'll mix it up, throw in some ice cubes, a banana, maybe some oats, maybe some yogurt, and I'm ready to seize the day. This has been my routine for over 2 years now, and I swear by it. It gives me the fuel I need to do whatever I need to do in the morning. Go for a run, go for a gym workout, sauna, take on some meetings, whatever. If you want to look and feel good, try Radix, R-A-D-I-X. Check them out at radixnutrition.co.nz. That's radixnutrition.co.nz. They approached me about sponsoring the podcast maybe about 15 months ago, and they've been massive supporters ever since, and I cannot thank them enough. And I genuinely believe in both these brands that are sponsoring the podcast. All right, I think that'll do us for this week. Once again, thank you so much. Really appreciate you being here and listening all the way through. And I do hope to see you next time on the Dom Harvey podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.